This program is intended for mature audiences only.
You know how you'll be thinking about someone and then suddenly they call? Or you quit your job not knowing how you're going to get by, and then not too long after, a job offer comes in. One time at One Taste, we were making a wish list of skills that we needed for the business. With a bunch of high-maintenance women, hairdresser made the list. Not too long after, a hairdresser showed up. So, coincidence or not? From One Taste Urban Retreat Center in San Francisco, we bring you A Taste of Sex Reality Audio, a podcast featuring the personal stories, revelations, and perspectives from people engaged in the conscious exploration of connection, sensuality, and relationship. Today's episode, Synchronicity. Part 1, a very unscientific inquiry into synchronicity. Part 2, the believers and the doubters. And part 3, the story of a synchronous relationship that withstood many odds, including a 2-year separation. I'm Judy Silber. Join us and turn on. Really, the argument about synchronicity is an argument about connection. Is there an elusive connection that ties all things in the universe together such that nothing happens by chance? Or is it all just random? Accidents of fate that determine our lives. At One Taste, we have a lot of people coming in and out of the retreat center for lectures, classes, workshops, and also just to hang out. It's not at all unusual that just as you're talking about someone, they walk in, even if you haven't seen them for a very long time. On the residential side, one of the most common places where this occurs is in the bathroom. In search for answers about synchronicity, my friend Bain and I decided to try a little experiment. We would hang out in the bathroom, talk, and see who showed up. It started with someone mentioning a guy named Bruce.
So you know how a lot of talk happens in the bathroom and how you'll be sitting in here and then the person you're talking about shows up inevitably?
Yeah.
So I thought we could try an experiment where we just start talking about someone and then we see if they show up. Okay, so who should we talk about?
Who should we talk about?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Shane.
Shane?
Yeah, he's got an interesting reentry story.
Okay, so we're talking about Shane, but he hasn't showed up yet. Usually it happens pretty immediately. Like, you're talking about them, and then all of a sudden they're just there.
Like, right.
Yeah. Oh, it's not Shane.
Oh,
no,
Bruce.
Oh, Bruce.
He's a little late. We were just talking about you.
We were talking about Bruce. Okay.
Feeling you're calling?
He just walked by. Doesn't quite count, because he didn't come into the bathroom.
Yeah. Takes a supernova to bend light, and right now Bruce is as close to light as any of us.
What are you talking about?
Well, he's kind of like walking along his path. He's on mission. And for us to suck him in, like bending light.
Oh, I see. I get it. We would have had to have a lot of energy coming from the bathroom.
We're not supernovas, and I think it's just time we admitted it.
Bane, this isn't really doing much for my project. The talk about
really?
The supernova? No.
Oh.
So, who should we talk about? Shane hasn't shown up yet. Oh, it's Beth!
Hi, Beth!
Beth!
Bane! What are we talking about?
Synchronicity! Who should we talk about is the question, because we're trying to call people into the bathroom to see if synchronicity is really real. We're doing a little experiment.
Wow. We should call into the bathroom someone with some medical expertise, since 3 people are now sick here.
Are you amongst the sick?
No.
Good. Raheli Allegrin, who else?
Rob.
Oh, yeah, Rob's
sick. Oh,
you're
kidding.
Now. Yeah, he's flat out in bed. I don't think any of them are showing up in the bathroom because they're all sick.
That's why we need to call the medical help.
Oh, medical help. We don't really have any medical help.
We need to call in some medical help, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Oh, it's Bruce. Oh, wait. Bruce is walking into the bathroom. So
that is.
Is that proof? Is that synchronicity?
That's synchronicity.
Or what? Bruce doesn't believe in synchronicity. Cal. No, but there's another one. Maybe Cal will come through. Cal.
He will. He lives here. It's his bathroom.
It would be just like him.
I already interviewed Bruce about his views on synchronicity. It's a probabilistic event. Okay, Marna is leaving the bathroom. Oh, it's Yia! We weren't even talking about you, but you showed up.
Yay!
Oh, yay! Synchronicity!
I think we gotta look at how well it's not working. There's something there.
Oh, wait, who's what? Leif, no, sorry, we weren't talking about you.
We're talking about synchronicity and, like, talking about someone in here, and then all of a sudden they walk in.
What are the odds?
Oh, really?
Like, you...
But you guys weren't even talking about anybody.
We haven't, no.
Maybe
well,
that's why nobody...
Bruce, kind of, Bruce worked.
If 10 minutes is the standard lag time for synchronicity, then I think we're spot on.
I don't know.
How about they come in, and then you talk about them? Is that synchronicity?
There you go.
Okay, Bruce, say the thing you said.
Said maybe you have to say nasty things about people that you hope they don't overhear in order to attract them.
Okay, who's out there? Marna.
Amy.
So far, no one that we've been talking about, other than Bruce, has walked in. Wait a minute. Oh, wait, it's Cal. Cal is walking by. We actually did say something about Cal.
What are we talking about?
Synchronicity. Okay, so maybe that wasn't the best experiment. Psychologist Carl Jung coined the term synchronicity to explain unrelated, simultaneous events that seemed more than coincidental. In his most famous example, a patient was reciting a dream that she'd had about a golden scarab, which is an image of a beetle. Suddenly, Jung heard a noise behind him. He turned around and saw a flying insect knocking against the window pane from the outside. He opened the window, and lo and behold, it was a beetle. In all seriousness, I have somewhat mixed views about synchronicity. On the one hand, as someone who studied biology, I'm a rationalist, a believer in probability. And then another part of me, the more romantic, poetic part, believes that there is an underlying force that drives everything that happens. I think about this force as energetic highways that crisscross the universe, linking everyone to everything. When people get on the same highway, they become connected, and the likelihood of them ending up in the same place at the same time goes up. Part 2. The Believers and the Doubters. Do you or do you not believe in synchronicity?
I do believe in synchronicity. I believe that people attract exactly what they need at any moment.
Yesterday, I was writing to my old roommate in New York, and I had just pulled up a website to write her a note. And at that moment, she called me, and we haven't spoken in about 2 weeks. So it's just amazing when two people are thinking about each other at the same time, and then you get kind of an event that affirms that connection.
And do you think that it's coincidence, or do you think that these are really synchronous events?
I think it's synchronicity. I think it's when you think about someone, you put out a certain energy, and when two people, I don't know, maybe if someone's sensitive enough or when two people can kind of meet on that energetic level, it'll start to manifest in like, oh, like, you know, both people have an impulse to call each other at the same time. And I think that has a lot to do with connection and just being tuned in with each other. I don't think it's coincidence.
Do you or do you not believe in synchronicity?
It depends on what you mean by synchronicity. Certainly things happen at the same time and at about the same time, and related things happen at about the same time.
So what kind of synchronicity do you believe in?
Coincidence, statistical.
So what do you think, like, when you're thinking about someone and they show up in the room, what's your explanation for it?
Well, most of the time when I think about someone, they don't show up in the room. Sometimes they do. It's really a matter of statistics. It's kind of, you know.
So you think it's purely mathematical?
Yeah, I think that if you think, you know, if you live as we do, surrounded by the same 40 or 50 people, and you're thinking about one of them, it's not really all that unlikely that they'll wander by.
Do you or do you not believe in synchronicity?
I'd like to say that I don't. I don't want to believe in it. I feel like it's up there with astrology and other kind of hocus-pocus silliness. But there have been a few things that happen that make me think that maybe there really is no such thing as coincidence.
Do you have a story that you can tell us?
Well, when I first moved into One Taste, a woman asked me to be the editor of the online magazine that would be about sensuality and spirituality. And I was kind of like, why would you think I would be good for this? And she said, because I thought of it and you were there. And so obviously it's like, it's just meant to be you. And I went through all the arguments, like, I don't have any background in this type of literature. I don't know that much about spirituality. I'm just not qualified for it. But I did really, really actually want to do it. Really badly. I just didn't feel like I was the appropriate person. And now, as it turns out, I am the editor of the magazine.
Do you or do you not believe in synchronicity?
I do believe in synchronicity.
Why?
Because I find it's something that happens in my life, and it definitely happens in my clients' lives. The moment someone signs on as a client for my coaching, I ask them to keep an eye out for the changes they begin to notice just because they signed on to have a coach. Every time I'm astounded by the number of things they say have begun to change in their life. Within the first week of their first coaching call, without exception, they begin to say, oh, I've noticed that I'm meeting more men, or these job opportunities suddenly seem to be opening up to me. And what I think it is that synchronicity for me means what I put my attention on grows stronger.
So it's not really like a convergence of energy, but it's more like you just start to notice what's already there because your attention is on it.
Yeah, I believe that's behind it. I think at times it can be about the energy there, and at the same time it's like, well, if you're focusing on it, you're going to be more aware of that energy anyway.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks to Cal, Allegra, Bruce, Harmony, and Rich for their input. So, what about relationships? Is it coincidence or synchronicity that brings people together? Do we meet the people in our lives through chance? Or is it connection? In other words, can people be connected before they even meet so that they are drawn together like magnets? Part 3. Racheli and Cal didn't meet under the best of circumstances. He was about to be married to her best friend. Still, they connected. Strongly. In an almost uncanny way. Here's Racheli.
So Cal and I met almost 5 years ago in Israel. There was a girl who I was very close with. She's actually my best friend. We'd become religious together, Orthodox Jews, and they started dating. And she was like, oh, I met this guy. You have to meet him. He's amazing. So we actually met over the phone. And we had a 6-month phone relationship. The first time I met him was about 2 weeks before their wedding. And we spent the next 2 weeks inseparable and very cutesy and lovey, which was kind of strange since he was getting married to my best friend. And so and it was funny, we would walk down the streets of Jerusalem and people would say, oh, are you twins? And I never thought that we looked anything alike. I mean, here's this guy, very good looking, blue eyes, and he had this long curly hair to his shoulders, and I was short with, you know, brown hair and brown eyes, but I just loved him. It was a connection that I'd had very few times in my life up until that point.
You've been listening to A Taste of Sex. We'll be back after this short break to hear more from Racheli and Cal. Stay tuned.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, erotic poetry reading, a companion program to Life in an Orgasm-Based Community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
This is A Taste of Sex Reality Audio. I'm Judy Silber.
So a week before you get married in Orthodox Judaism, the bride and the groom don't see each other. And each person has a guard. So I was her guard for the week. And all communications between the two of them was being passed between me. And he comes to the house at 3 a.m. and he's like, Rachali! And in the old city, when you whisper, it echoes down the streets. So I come to the door, I'm in my pajamas, and I said to him, you can't be here. And he was like, I have to talk to you. In this desperate, frantic, if you don't come out, my life might end look on his face. So I got dressed and I came out and we walked for hours. I think we might have even seen the sun come up. And he turns to me at one point and said,
this is probably the biggest mistake ever in my life I'm about to make. I remember going through the wedding as a concept, but I don't really remember being present there. Like it all played through and all was happening. For some reason, I was somewhere else. It was this whole show that everyone was performing in this beautiful, on this beautiful platform called Life. But internally, there was something else going on. There was this multi-dynamic reality happening, and I was building a relationship with Racheli. Probably the only face I remember looking at my wedding was Racheli.
He stayed in Israel. I went back to Dallas, and we spoke anywhere from 6 to 8 times a day on the phone.
For how long?
For the entire 10 months that they were married.
And were you talking to her also?
On and off, sporadically, depending on what kind of mood she was in. Most of the time she was hating me and resenting me that we were so close. And then she got pregnant and freaked out. So I spoke to her frequently throughout her pregnancy. And then when the baby was 2 months old, they came to the States. There was a conference I was attending with a teacher of mine, and Cal met me in Wisconsin. And we ended up spending the entire weekend together. That weekend for me changed the course of my life, because I came back and decided I didn't want to be Orthodox anymore and left a 5-year lifestyle right around the same time that he was deciding the same thing.
Cal went back to his life and Racheli went on with hers. And then
he and I had a conversation. I got together with this guy that I had a crush on, and I called to tell him, and I was excited. And he said, well, I'm happy for you and I'm sad. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, I'm happy for you because you're happy and you're my friend. And he said, and I'm sad that it's not me. And I just did not know what to do with that. I actually hung up on him.
One day I come in and I'm checking my emails, and I got this email from Racheli that she loves me and that she knows at this point that the best thing she can do for me is to say goodbye until it's time again to meet again or to start communicating again. And I remember sitting there in front of the computer just crying. And the only thing that went through my head is that imagine what it means to be a friend. Somebody I was so deeply connected is willing to tell me goodbye, knowing that the relationship was just destructive.
So 2 years without talking, did you think about her a lot?
Yeah. I had a few friends that I had introduced to her that stayed close to her, that I constantly kept on checking in with, like, how is she doing? What's going on? I want to talk to her. Is she okay? And I kept on checking in.
We have a very close friend in common who he constantly, through the 2 years, was trying to pass messages through. And she would be like, oh, I talked to Cal, and I would immediately say, I don't want to hear it. I'm not interested. Two years ago, I had a very close friend of mine who I also had become religious with who lost her first child. And immediately I thought, oh, I'm going to fly to Israel. And I hadn't been to Israel actually since his wedding. On a whim, I called a friend of mine who's a spiritual teacher and said, I've never done this type of thing before, and I'm freaking out. I had a friend that just lost a baby. I'm thinking of going to Israel. I need you to do a reading. And he was like, okay.
And why did you feel like you needed a reading?
I think there was just this part where I couldn't get clarity, and it felt like...
About what, though?
Around going to Israel, or what I thought was around going to Israel.
And why was it such a big decision?
I I don't know. I think partially because I hadn't been in 3 years. And so there was that disconnect that I had felt from a place that had been strongly been a part of my life. And then there was a whole thing really around Cal's ex-wife. And I think in the back of my consciousness was that voice that said, it's time to get in touch with him. And I needed some kind of clarity or guidance around it. The 2 years that I had spent not talking to him, I actually hadn't talked about him at all. So anybody that had come into my life during that period of time didn't even know who he was. So you can imagine what happened when all of a sudden in this reading, he says to me, yeah, there was this couple you were really close to. They were married. They have a kid. There was a really dramatic breakup. You haven't spoken to him in 2 years, and you're wondering if you should get in touch with him. I said to him, how do you know this? And he said, I don't know. It came up in the reading. And he said, Racheli, it's time to get in touch with him. So I got home that night and spoke to this mutual friend of ours who said, oh, by the way, I should just let you know that Cal's trying to get in touch with you.
She sent me an email that she wanted to talk to me. And I responded, like, I remember running to the email and it was kind of like, okay, call me at this number where I was working. And she called me and I can just remember the, like, the tears, my, like, the, like, laughing. I couldn't stop giggling. There was just, I was screaming and there was, like, sweat and cold chills going through my body.
So after that, he came to visit about a week later. And there was this whole romantic relationship, very long in coming, that started to blossom. And he was living in Pittsburgh. I was living in Dallas. I was finishing school. And I had this really intense, amazing week with him. And I remember I was sitting in this restaurant with him, and all of a sudden I realized he was leaving in 2 days. And I got so sad and I started crying. And I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, now I have you back in my life and you're leaving. And it was this whole devastating experience for me. And he looked at me and said, don't worry about it. We'll work it out.
Racheli went to visit him in Pittsburgh.
So the first night I'm there, we were taking this walk, and all of a sudden he turns to me and says, I want a non-monogamous relationship, which was so out of my realm of understanding, I didn't even know what to say. And I just kind of turned and looked at him and said, what? And he said, I want to be with you, and I want to be able to be with other people. And I remember being so angry and so hurt, and then part of me just being humiliated. And I was ready at that point to just pack my bags and go back to the airport and write the whole thing off as a horrible mistake. And then I heard that voice that said, just stay, just sleep on it.
The voice,
that elusive voice that I know is the right thing to do. And I don't ever want to listen to it because I know my life is about to drastically change.
I can see how everything I said was seeping into her system, and all of a sudden, like, things were rearranging in her mind. By the next morning, I remember laying in bed and we started talking about it, and finally I had the, I don't know, by the grace of God, we were both sitting there and laying in bed, and I started explaining to her exactly what my system was experiencing. The desire to want to be with everybody and the desire to not put up any boundaries, what the relationship would look like beforehand, rather than just letting the relationship determine rather than my mind.
And then I met this woman that he had a crush on, and he finally felt like he could tell me about, who said to me, yeah, you know, Cal's been talking about you, and I've been thinking about your relationship and what you guys are embarking on. And I have to just tell you that there's this place in San Francisco and they research sensuality, connection, and purpose. It's called the One Taste Urban Retreat Center. And I think you should go. And I remember sitting at the kitchen table and I just kind of looked at her and I said, okay, thanks. And then spent the next 3 days in Pittsburgh wondering what it would be like to go there. I mean, and at this point I was headed to graduate school, like a full ride, basically, my life paid for and taken care of for the next 3 years. And all of a sudden, here comes this woman whom I boyfriend thinks is attractive and is cute and wants to explore a relationship with, who really changed the course of my life. And so I flew home 3 days later to Dallas, and in the car on the way home from the airport called information to One Taste in San Francisco, and ended up speaking to somebody who told me briefly about what it was like and what was going on here and the community. And I called Cal and said, I think we should go. Here was this place that I didn't really have enough information about, that that voice inside my head was saying, we need to go, we need to go, we need to go, we need to go, we need to go.
You went. You and Cal both. Mm-hmm. You both got in a car. A dilapidated car.
A dilapidated car.
As I recall.
That I'm still, to this day, I'm in shock that that car made it as far as it did.
You both ended up making this your permanent residence.
We did.
So there's a residential immersion program here. You both entered into that.
Right.
Became almost like full-time students, and then began working for the business of One Taste.
Right.
Did you end up living happily ever after with Cal in San Francisco, or how did that go?
I guess it depends how one wants to define happily ever
after. That's good.
It wasn't in this fairy tale Disney version of romance, we're going to live happily ever after. We took this walk.
Another walk.
Down to the water. And I remember it was cold. I remember the way the wind felt on my skin. I don't think I had ever been that consciously aware of the way that I had been feeling before in my life. And he just started talking about what he wanted and how he wanted the experience to be. Oh, because at that point, we were only going to be in San Francisco for 6 weeks.
How long had you been here for?
Less than 5 hours. I mean, we took the walk, I think, 3 or 4 hours after we arrived here, down to the water. And he looked at me and said, it's over. And I remember the wind, and I had this blue hoodie on, and so I thought, oh, surely I didn't hear him correctly. And I remember taking my hoodie off and saying, what?
I felt that if everyone was going to perceive that we are together, that means that both of us will now be able to have the ultimate experience of being absolutely open for a new experience. In my thinking, I mean, I was absolutely sincere at the time. It was not, I did not know how much it was going to affect that, how much the conversation was going to affect her. What she was experiencing later on, she told me, was the absolute, like, abandonment. Like, here we have arrived, and the time when I need you the most, in the time when I need your assurance the most, you dropped me. And for me, it was basically, I want us to get the maximum out of this experience, or I wanted to get the maximum out of the experience, and I wanted us to stay connected, find ways where we can continue to communicate and support each other, but have our paths be separate.
So they put us in two separate beds, but they were two beds that were next to each other. Which for me was so challenging, and I hated it. And then even after we ended up moving beds and getting together with different people, our beds were still next to each other. And I remember the way I would feel at night with him in the bed next to me sleeping with somebody else, and how part of me just thought, God, this is wrong. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. And at the same time thinking, but this is what I wanted.
What was what you wanted?
To be able to explore, to be able to explore the realm of what it meant to open my sex and to really go into sensuality, which I hadn't. And he, for most of our relationship, had been very sexual and I hadn't. So he was non-monogamous and I was monogamous with him. And so really exploring what it was like to be intimate with other people and having him there so close next to me. And we fought like cats and dogs for months. And hated each other.
So you moved to New York to start up One Taste New York. Mm-hmm. And then Cal followed about, was it 6 months later? 8 months later?
Yeah, six 6 months later.
And then both of you are actually now back in San Francisco. So your relationship, in a way, has come full circle.
Yeah.
And how is it now?
Everything really changed when I moved to New York in June, because there was some breath and some distance between the two of us. And so we began to be able to really find that place of friendship that we had had years ago, and to start to build something back from there. And there's a sense for me of just like, oh, okay, this is what it was supposed to be like.
So in a way, there were a lot of things that had to come together mm-hmm. in order for both you and Cal to make it, well, first to come back into contact with one another, and then to make it across the country together. So I want to know, how do you explain that in your mind?
I don't know if it's fate, or it's synchronicity, or God, or whatever you want to call it. But there was something that said, you guys are supposed to do this, and you're supposed to do it together.
I would define the relationship as path partners. Like, we walk on the same journey, reminding each other of what my purpose is. I remind her what her purpose. In the end of the day, when there's nobody to communicate, or I wouldn't give anyone permission to come in, she was in Sarbi the only person I would. And I think the other way goes around. Like, we keep each other. There's a benefit to relationship that we can really see each other. And there is no, like, she wouldn't co-sign any of my bullshit, and I wouldn't do that to her. Like, there's the absolute blunt honesty as it is, without needing to defend anything. What fascinates me is that how my path and her path were so uniquely different, but so uniquely the same at the same time. Like, she was having an internal calling, an internal moving to the next level. And because she was true to her journey and I was true to my journey, we met at the exact same place.
Thank you for listening to A Taste of Sex. You can find transcripts of this show at personallifemedia.com. For more information about One Taste, our lectures, classes, and workshops on sensuality, connection, and relationship, check us out at onetaste.us. I'm Judy Silber. Join us next week.
So it's just amazing when two people are thinking about each other at the same time, and then you get kind of an event that affirms that connection.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.